It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We have passed Labor Day, and we're now into the home stretch of the Pennsylvania governor's race. No incumbent governor has ever lost in the Keystone State, which used to limit each governor to just one term. But the streak could be broken this year. The latest Franklin & Marshall poll shows the Democratic challenger, Tom Wolf, leading incumbent Republican Tom Corbett by 25 points. Why isn't Governor Corbett making more of a dent in Wolf's lead? And what would a Wolf win mean for the Commonwealth? I'm joined now by phone from Harrisburg by Penn Live opinion page editor John Micek. Good day, John.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Let's begin with the poll numbers. Wolf leads Corbett 49% to 24%, according to this latest Franklin and Marshall poll. These are unheard of numbers, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, as I wrote on Penn Live last week, you keep talking to people who do this kind of thing professionally and they watch these races and they say, well, the race is going to tighten. It's inevitably going to tighten. It's going to tighten. And the voice takes in the increasing amount of desperation. It's going to tighten, right? Right, right, right. But, you know, here we are in, September, with 2 months to go, and Mr. Wolf's lead is effectively unchanged from what it was back in June in this new Franklin and Marshall, poll. Governor Corbett spent the best part of the summer out on the road touring the state, trying to build support for his efforts to pass pension relief, campaigning against the state legislature, and yet it didn't move the needle, and it actually made his negatives go up a little bit. It's really quite extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it.
Why does Wolf have such a big lead? Have you been able to put your finger on it?
You know, it's sometimes I wonder if so much every race is a vote against the incumbent, and I don't know how much of this is support for Mr. Wolf as opposed to antipathy or hostility to Governor Corbett. That certainly has to play into it. As we saw in the primary, he ran a very effective media campaign. He got out in front early and defined himself as a positive candidate, as a guy with solutions. And he rode that to a very substantial victory, 40 points, I think, in the May primary, and continued that strategy through the summer months. You know, the Corbett campaign has come after him in ads, and the Wolf campaign has responded in kind. He is in large part a beneficiary of Governor Corbett's unpopularity. You haven't seen a governor this consistently unpopular in a very long time. His approval has barely broken out of the 30s. And to a large extent, Mr. Wolf is a beneficiary of that.
And the strategy has become pretty obvious. In fact, Pennsylvanians might have to remind themselves that Wolf's first name is Tom and not millionaire, as in millionaire
right.
Tom Wolf, which is how he is often referenced in Corbett ads, which have been all over the airwaves lately. And yet, they don't seem to be making any kind of a dent in Wolf's lead. Why aren't these ads maybe resonating more with people?
Well, I think for one thing, I will say that we're, despite the fact that we're in the age of the permanent campaign, it's a relatively new phenomenon in Pennsylvania, and maybe some chunk of voters, that means like 25% in the current poll, who are still undecided, haven't checked into these videos quite yet, or checked in on these ads quite yet, and we may see that change as we get into the colder months here. It's been fine. They come after him for, while not in charge of his own company, for filing corporation papers in Delaware. They tried to brand him as millionaire Tom Wolf, but Wolf, to a large extent, has inoculated himself against that because he has this kind of sort of kindly, preppy, professorial demeanor. And, when you try to brand that kind of guy, millionaire Tom Wolf, it doesn't resonate the same way as, say, branding billionaire Donald Trump or billionaire Michael Bloomberg. He doesn't have that kind of dragon person persona. He sort of runs counter to what you think of when you think of, like, the heartless capitalist, which is certainly what the Corbett campaign has tried to paint him as.
Which seems like an odd strategy for a Republican against a Democrat. And, I mean,
you said that first.
Well, it's something where in recent ads, it's been the strategy always seems to come down to you attack the guy that's in the lead, but then But then you're seeing all this negativity, and people are tracing it, evidently tracing it back to Governor Corbett. Is it something where there's a fatigue among the voters and people watching these ads, that they're just tired of seeing the attack ads, and maybe they would like to see Governor Corbett say something more positive about what he has done in office?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the narrative through every campaign, but I think Governor Corbett is running so far behind at this point that really Pennsylvanians know who he is, right? So if it was, I'm going to introduce myself to Pennsylvanians and convince them of all the good stuff I've been doing, you know, that ship to a certain extent has already sailed, because they've had 3 years of knowing what Tom Corbett has done. But he's had a couple of those positive ads where he's highlighted his record on jobs and schools and that kind of stuff. But when you're back this far, really your most effective strategy is to punch at the other guy and try to tear him down to the extent that you can. But again, it's just not working in this instance. And as Franklin and Marshall pollster Terry Madonna told my colleague Christina Kaufman last week, Pennsylvanians already know or think they know who Tom Corbett is, and apparently aren't going to be dissuaded of that. I mean, it's entirely too early to call a result, and I'm not even going to go there. But it is not, you know, out of the realm of possibility to say that for Governor Corbett to reverse his image now is a huge lift.
But you would think, I mean, it always seems to be a pattern that as you get closer to Election Day, the polls indicate that the race is tightening. Is that still an inevitability here?
Well, look, he's an incumbent Republican governor, right? So based purely on that, you got to assume that he gets to 40% just because of registration numbers. You have to assume that he gets to 40%. So, yeah, the race is going to have to inevitably tighten. At least that's what we all think is going to happen. But if you look at the governor's reelects, even among Republicans, there's some skepticism there too. This is a very new dynamic that we've not seen, as you noted at the beginning of your intro, that we've seen in the 4 decades that we've had this unbroken streak of one party control for 8 years of the governor's mansion.
If you have a comment or question about the race for governor in Pennsylvania for our guest, Penn Live opinion page editor John Micek, you can join the conversation. 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH. Hashtag EP Live. Which issues are most important to you in this governor's race? Which stands do you take issue with on the part of each candidate? 412-246-2002. The number to call again, 412-246-2002. There isn't a lot of common ground between these two on the issues, is there, Tom? Is there, John? We have two Toms in the race, so I figured maybe makes three. These guys don't overlap on many of the issues, do they?
They don't overlap on a single issue. No, I mean, Mr. Wolf supports a Marcellus Shale fracking tax. The governor does not. Mr. Wolf supports pouring more money into public education. The governor counters that he has. The governor's come after him for his income tax plan last week that he says, well, and we could get into the weeds on that one if you'd like, but the governor says if Mr. Wolf is elected, he's going to raise income taxes for all Pennsylvanians. No, there's almost zero overlap between these two guys.
Which issue or issues are you finding as you talk to people, as you get feedback from your readers, what are you finding matters most to people in Pennsylvania?
It's the same stuff that polls highly in every election. People are, and particularly, you know, these days, they're concerned about jobs, they're concerned about schools particularly, because there's the perception out there, the public education has taken an almost irrecoverable hit under Tom Corbett. The narrative that the governor cut $1 billion out of public education, which is not entirely accurate, has taken root in a very real way. And for, you know, most voters, many of whom are parents or have school-aged kids, education is a key issue, and that's what they're talking about quite a lot.
And let's talk about what you cited as the truth or lack of truth behind this nearly $900 million reduction in state aid to public schools. Like all the candidates in the Democratic primary, Wolf has consistently hammered the governor on this.
Right.
But is it somewhat disingenuous to say that? Because, as the governor points out, the reduction is based on expiring federal stimulus funds that he says that he insists should have gone should never have gone to school districts' operating budgets.
Yeah, I mean the governor has an absolutely valid point there, and he can also point to the fact that he put more money into the basic education subsidy during his first 3 years in office. It was flatlined this year in favor of a block grant program that the administration believes will give districts more flexibility. So, I mean, that's sort of the bottom line of the narrative. But when you talk to Democrats, what they argue is that the math is fuzzy, that, well, yes, there may have been more money going into the basic education subsidy, but the percentage of it that went directly into classrooms and directly to students was lower than it was previously because of increased public, because of increased pension obligations. So they're saying as a consequence, less money went in. I mean, look, we do know a couple of things. We do know that districts had to cut jobs and programs dramatically in the wake of that federal stimulus money going away. We do know the public school staffing is at its lowest level in 10 years statewide. But it is unfair, I think, to entirely lay that at the feet of Governor Corbett. I mean, the district's got, had, there was $1 billion in federal stimulus money that was there, and then it went away. If you talk to some people, if you say, I had less money this week than I had last week, the distribution channels will matter less than the fact that they had less money this week than they had last week. So that has been, you know, that is one of the things that Democrats have been able to sell to people quite effectively.
Does the governor need to make himself more available to the media? He seems to do so only in controlled situations, and that's not necessarily uncommon for some incumbents in particular. But he seems to avoid the one-on-one interview. Does he need to do more of it, if for no other reason than to get what we just talked about, the truth about some of these funding proposals out there?
Well, his attendance have been out there for 3 years. The governor himself has pushed back against this narrative, and it still hasn't. You know, it still hasn't reversed. It's still out there, and Democrats have been pounding away on it for 3 years. So they may recognize that that is a losing battle, and they've done what they can with it. You are right that the governor most often appears in controlled settings, and when there are questions he's confronted with that he doesn't want to talk about, he doesn't answer them. He can be kind of, like anybody else in a one-on-one setting, he can be hit or miss. Sometimes he can be gaffe prone, as was the case, I think, was it last year when he stuck his foot in his mouth about both the unemployed and gay marriages. But sometimes also he can actually be his most effective when he's one-on-one. Far be it for me to advise the campaign on their media strategy, but making him a little bit more available probably wouldn't hurt.
Has he been, from your standpoint as a journalist, as an opinion page editor, and for the journalists who are employed by your operation, do you feel that he's been available to you?
I'm not in those settings as often anymore as my Capitol colleagues, who might have sort of a different vantage point on it than I do. Certainly, there have been fewer public events, and they're more controlled than they were under Governor Ed Rendell, who would literally go talk, attend an envelope opening. Was the old joke. He has been less, on the whole, I think, has been less accessible. Although under Jay Packney, his current press spokesman, and I think there have been efforts to make him a little bit more open, to sort of sand the edges off that harsher public image, but when you're a journalist, obviously you want more access rather than less. So I will eternally be greedy that way.
412-246-2002 is the number to call to join our conversation with Penn Live opinion page editor John Micek. We're talking about the governor's race. We're into the home stretch now, just about 2 months until Election Day, as the voters will go to the polls to decide whether to reelect the incumbent, Governor Tom Corbett, or the Democratic challenger, Tom Wolf. 412-246-2002. Let's go to Mark in Washington, PA. Mark, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you.
Okay. I don't know. Am I on? Am I live?
You are live. You are on the air. Go ahead with your comment or question, please.
Okay. Well, the comment that I have is that I'm a farm landowner here in Washington, Pennsylvania, and Governor Corbett was supportive and instrumental in passing a bill that allowed gas companies to bypass having to sign a lease with we landowners and allowing the gas company to drill on our properties and give us no upfront bonus payment and also state minimum royalty on the gas that would be extracted. And aside from that, neighbors that we had were being offered $5,000-$7,000 per acre for their land and 19% in royalty. So he went into this supportively, annexing our ability as landowners for generations to negotiate with these gas companies just because for some unknown ambiguous reason, he took the power away from the landowners and the people. My opinion, it was one of the most blatant criminal actions that I've ever seen any politician position themselves with that type of posture.
Mark, it sounds like what you're talking about here is some sort of creative use of eminent domain. John Micek, what do you know about this?
That is, I will confess to not being an expert on Marcel Shale policy, but I can say more globally that, you know, the governor for 3 years now has been criticized for being too cozy with the industry and giving them too free a hand to operate in the state. But beyond that, I don't think I could comment on the specifics of your caller's concerns.
Sorry we couldn't help you more there, Mark. Let's go to Kathy in Oakland. Kathy, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, thank you. I'm looking at a chart that was published on a blog called Yinzercation, which is an education Pittsburgh blog I follow.
Sure.
And this chart shows that education funding, if you take out pensions, is still below the 2008-2009 level. And so I understand, you know, there's some quibbling about what the stimulus did and what it did not. But I know that we've lost 20,000 teaching jobs in Pennsylvania since Corbett took office. So I would just want to challenge John a little bit more on those finances. I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old in the Pittsburgh public schools. They have less now than when my 10-year-old started in kindergarten in terms of programs, in terms of staff. I don't know if it's just perception. I really think that the cut is real. I think we're feeling it, and I think it's across the board. I think parents across the Commonwealth are up in arms because of what's actually happening and not just a perception.
John, you're being challenged here, but you spoke to this issue earlier that education.
I don't believe that your caller and I are disagreeing. You know, the contention is that less money went into the classrooms, and we are seeing the effect of that with programmatic cuts and cuts to teachers. You know, I'm not here to either support or defend what the administration did just to present both sides of the arguments. I don't disagree with her. Staffing levels are lower. Programs were cut. That is undeniable. But just presenting the two arguments from the opposing camps.
And I think, too, we were trying to simply clarify that much of the reduction in available monies was due to the expiring federal stimulus funds. So,
exactly right, yeah.
Right, so just trying to clarify that. Kathy, thank you for that call, 412-246-2002. Another issue that I think needs to be brought up, it is a recent development, but how are potential voters, John, are you seeing? It's still a relatively fresh thing, but how are they reacting to Governor Corbett's Healthy PA plan, which just got federal approval? Are you getting the sense that citizens in the Commonwealth are happy with what he did here, or do they think it would have been quicker, easier, and perhaps better if the governor had simply agreed to an expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act the way it was originally set up?
Well, that just happened at the tail end of last week, so I've not had a lot of time to do pulse takings on it. But if you look at the polling data generally, there was support for the Medicaid, for the traditional Medicaid expansion under authorized under Obamacare, and there was some skepticism about the governor's initial healthy PA plan. Brad Bumstead, writing in the Tribune Review the other day, said he doesn't think this is going to be much of a game changer for voters one way or the other, that they were skeptical about Tom Corbett. Now that we have healthy PA, they're going to come down off the fence for him. You know, when it comes to Obamacare, voters kind of are where they are on this stuff.
One last question for you before we wrap this up. I you seem to have been somewhat reluctant in the past to look into the crystal ball, but if based on the way things are now and the potential developments down the road, how do you see things shaking out between now and the first Tuesday in November?
It's you know, again, I'm far be it for me to call an election this far out, but if you look at these numbers, it's an exceptionally difficult gap for Governor Corbett to close. Which isn't saying that it can't happen, because God knows all kinds of weird things can happen in these campaigns, and they most often do. But, you know, we're going to see what we've seen throughout the course of the summer, an increasingly negative campaign, a ton of money coming in. For me, one of the key things to watch is what happens with the Republican Governors Association. If the governor continues to lag behind by a significant margin, and we're getting into middle to late October, does the RGA then decide that his money is best spent someplace else, and does it pull up stakes and go someplace else? If and when that happens, that will be a very telling sign, I think.
Oftentimes a game changer can be a debate or a series of debates. We haven't heard, correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't seem to have heard anything about any debates being scheduled. What have you heard?
Those are all three of those have been inked. One in each media market starting here on September 22nd in Harrisburg. And there's one in Philly and one in Pittsburgh. So those are ready to go.
They are ready to go. And there will be three.
Yep.
Just as in the presidential election. All right. Well, very
good.
I will
say Penn Live was gunning for one, but we were snubbed. But that's all right.
Well, a lot of people were apparently, but it's good to hear that the dates have been set. And John, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. John Micek is the opinion page editor for Penn Live, joining us by phone from Harrisburg. John, as always, great thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll look at a new personal safety device developed here in Pittsburgh. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.